secure.
Part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
All right, so shall we begin this podcast, this second podcast of the week, two podcast week?
Ooh, what? Double down.
Double podcast week.
It's a double podcast week, and it is the second podcast. It is a two podcast week because we are going to be discussing The Incredibles 2. Yes.
Why, that's incredible.
Incredible. But before we discuss The Incredibles 2, I want to take a second to discuss something else that's very important and very serious. As of right now, we are recording Tuesday night, June 19th. We seem to be having a refugee and immigrant crisis in this country. And I really just wanted to shout out to this organization called, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce it correctly, it's called RAICES, or RAICES, R-A-I-C-E-S. And this is an organization that you can donate to. A link will go up on the site when this podcast goes up on Thursday. That's when I'm hoping to have this up. And it is an organization that fights for the legal rights of refugees and immigrants that are coming to this country, and also most importantly to help families that are being separated from their children. What is happening right now in this country is, if you are listening to this podcast, you read comic books, you go to movies, you have a moral compass, or you should. And what is happening in this country is completely unacceptable, intolerable, and tyrannical. And I am completely against it. I believe that Raina and Paul are as well. I don't mean to drag you into my political shout out, but
absolutely agree.
It is, we are talking about a movie about superheroes. So this organization, R-A-I-C-E-S, you can Google it, will take your money and put it in places that can help these children hopefully get reunited with their families, or not be deported or taken away, like out of this country, away from their families, or basically just help immigrants that are trying to live a better life and get to this country. So now that I've rambled on very nervously about that.
Oh, thank you for doing that. That's awesome. That's amazing. Thank you.
I mean, honestly, that's, I'm glad you brought that up too, because I feel that this movie, while it is entertainment, also sort of does reflect a very real political reality today. It's definitely a time where people are scared.
Yeah.
And, this movie, I think, even though it's a fun, entertaining superhero movie, does bring up the question of, you know, what people are willing to do out of fear and out of, you know, I guess out of what they think is necessity.
Yeah. And I mean, right now, obviously, I don't get political on this podcast too much, but I am not a fan of our current president, and I've kept my mouth shut on a lot of stuff. Obviously, there is a link for the Brady Center Against Gun Violence on my site at all times, but this is important. This is not something we can turn away from and cover our eyes and say, like, oh my God, we should, this is something that we should not be paying attention to. This is something that we should all rush into with our superheroic hearts and just attack and fight against, because this is wrong. Despite whatever your opinions are about immigration, illegal immigration, borders, whatever, this is something that is, we cannot tolerate as a society. And hopefully by the time this podcast goes up, which will hopefully be the 21st, a solution will have been worked out. It sounds like lawmakers are trying to come together to just take care of this particular problem, but I doubt it. So if it has not been resolved, and even if it has, it looks like this organization, RAICES, or however you pronounce it, I'm mangling the pronunciation, I'm sure, is there to help people who are seeking refugee status or are just coming here to try and find a better life and have no other way about it. So, yeah, we should, you should all go visit that and donate money. I understand money's pouring in, but yeah, anyone who finds this issue important should go there. And with that being said, let's talk about The Incredibles 2, because that is what came out this weekend, and it was an amazing movie, was it not?
Yes.
It certainly was, yeah. It was funny. Did you get to see the little, you know, pre-movie, hey, it's worth the wait. It's worth the wait for, you know, we know it's been 14 years, you know, but we promise it's going to be good.
Oh, no, no. Was there a thing?
Really?
Because I actually saw, what I went and saw was, we saw a marathon. So we saw The Incredibles 1 and The Incredibles 2 back to back, like Wednesday night. So it was like one of these screenings where they were saying like, oh, you're going to be the first ones to see this movie. And so, you know, it's something I kind of wanted to do on Father's Day if they were doing it like for Father's Day weekend. But it turned out that it was on that Wednesday night. So we all piled into the car and went to go see Incredibles 1 and 2. And the theater that showed it didn't give you time between movies. So had to run out to the credit. So we even missed the bow short. We missed the beginning, like almost all of that. So yeah, we get to see that. We saw the very end, which we assumed something sad happened because there were people crying or something, but we did not see the short. So I do want to see Incredibles 2 again. So
yes, Pixar definitely with bow, the short that comes before it. I mean, they know that, like, when people start watching Pixar movies, they need to be viewing it through a veil of tears.
You know
what I mean?
Yeah.
I forgot, too. I was just like, wait, this is a weird way to start Incredible. Oh, they're doing... Oh, no. Oh, okay, here it comes, and then the tears. And it was great. I just, like, I forgot they did that, because it's been a minute since I've seen a Pixar film in the theater. I guess that's not true. Coco wasn't... Yes, it was.
Yes, Coco was.
I guess Coco was the last time I saw it. But we had a big, like... Don't, you know, sorry for it being so long. This will be great. Don't worry. It's worth the wait. Like, we got a couple of the main characters, the actors coming on stage or coming onto the screen to say that to everybody, which was just kind of funny. It was necessary.
It was cute. Yeah, it was completely unnecessary. But, I mean, it was like, I guess this was the way to, like, you know, ease the nerds who were, like, you know, upset over the long wait between volumes of their entertainment.
Well, how could you be upset? I mean, 14 years. I mean, it is crazy that it's been like 14, almost 15 years since the last one. And
when a sequel comes out, it should just be bonus unless they set you up for the sequel, I guess.
Exactly. You know, and I think that's what, you know, everyone wanted.
But if Avengers took 14 years to come out again.
But what's fantastic was I love the way that it just picks up exactly where the first one left off.
Yeah, that was cool.
You know, and a really fun way to examine to start in is like through the perspective of the character.
I wish I would have watched the first one a little bit more recently, because it's been a minute, but you know, you didn't need to.
No. I really dug that beginning, the way they started off, like, you know, seeing it sort of through Tony's eyes and then jumping back, you know, into the whole Underminer chase, you know.
Yeah,
that was a fun way to kick the movie off.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting seeing the first one. First of all, I hadn't seen the first one in a while. Like, I own it on DVD, not Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. I have to get the Blu-ray because this projection, I mean, I'm sure it's beyond Blu-ray quality.
But
seeing it, like, on the big screen, it was super clean, super bright, and super beautiful.
And the design in that first movie is just so great, you know, that it just, yeah, it really, honestly, the best screen that you can find, you know, like, that, it's a movie, it's one of those movies you want to see under optimal circumstances,
Yeah, and I mean, I saw the first Incredibles in the theater the first time, obviously, and I've seen it since on DVD and stuff, but the thing of it is, was like, seeing it blown up like that and big again, I was just like, wow, this is amazing. And then the other thing that I noticed too was like, wow, like this does, I mean, it's not dated or anything. It holds up really well, but there are artifacts like in the CG and the computer stuff where I was like they had, you could tell they were definitely having some problems with hair and stuff. There was a scene where, I think Mr. Incredible goes to like reach for his hair and he puts his hands in his hair and like a chunk of the hair like disappears a little bit. Like, and and just seeing it so big, like compared to this new movie and particularly what we're used to at this point with stuff like Coco. Like,
right.
I was like, wow, this really, I mean, not saying it looks bad because it didn't, because I was impressed, but you could tell that technology has jumped like a ways. Sure.
For sure. I mean, I think both of them are great. I mean, because I think The Incredibles was sort of like state of the art at its time. You know what I mean? And I feel like this one very much is the same way, you know, in terms of like, I'm not just texture in terms of like, you know, fabric, hair, material, you know, but like sort of the stylized textures that they're starting to be able to get out with some of their sequences. You know, I mean, you're seeing sort of new textures that you would not really be able to see in life, you know? And like, that's really, I feel like very exciting.
Yeah. Especially like, I think like the boat and like the aircrafts and a lot of that like seemed real in some things. Like you forgot you were watching a cartoon for a second. Or an animation. I don't know. Did that mean of me to call it a cartoon? That's not what I meant.
I'm sure they would love you calling it a cartoon. I'm sure Brad Bird would be like, I'm so happy for you to call it a cartoon.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it is. You know, it's, and what's great was, you know, there's a little call out to Johnny Quest in there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they have it running on a television in there. And to see a 2D animation inside of that world felt so organic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That it was just like, wow. That was a great homage because it's like, that's exactly the kind of feeling that, you know, I get out of The Incredibles. I get that sort of Alex Toth, like, you know, anything's possible kind of feeling.
Ooh, I almost feel like that world could exist like if they did like a Jetsons remake.
Definitely.
Yeah. Sure,
it's definitely of that era of like where the future seemed very different and much more positive and interesting, you know what I mean? Where the possibilities were like, oh my God, we're going to have flying cars someday, you know what I mean? I mean, it really is of that sort of like 60s era, and you're putting that Johnny Quest like thing was like the sort of validation of anyone who's been like, oh, this is sort of like, it was, and it very much kind of like put a time stamp on it too, like to me, because it's like, I mean, I guess you're sort of, you know, The Incredibles has always been like an homage to like Silver Age sort of like superheroes. I don't think they ever really like put a date on it. And for me, like this movie definitely with that Johnny Quest thing and the design of the other superheroes and stuff that eventually show up very much put a stamp on like, this is in the 60s. You know what I mean? I was going to say, which is interesting because Paul, a long time ago, when we used to talk about a Fantastic Four movie, like years and years and years ago, Paul's great idea was like, no, the Fantastic Four needs to be a period piece. It needs to be set in the 60s and it needs to be of that time. And I remember being like, oh man, that's a great idea. And I mean, that's kind of like basically what they did with The Incredibles.
Yeah, for sure. And if anything, I felt like the design in this one went backwards, you know, like this one felt even more like it was going toward the 50s in its design than like the Incredibles, which definitely the first one had that sort of I guess late 60s sort of Bond, James Bond feel to it, you know. This one had its own feel. This one didn't feel like an homage to like any sort of movie style, you know what I mean? It felt very much its own thing.
Yeah.
which was really cool.
Yeah. I mean, differences, things that I noticed seeing them back to back, things that I noticed, like, obviously the first one is beautiful and all that stuff, but there's a lot of scenes where they're like in a lair and it's dark and you could tell they're sort of like using the blacks to fill in space to maybe hide things that they couldn't right. do. But in this one, when you see like the underminer fight, like to me, it's almost like we're going to open and we're going to open big and we're going to show you like how much the visuals have advanced because in the underminer thing, you can see the details of like the gears and the machines in the background. And it seems like with the first Incredibles, everything's like very smooth and blocky and stuff that. Yes. And it's like they wouldn't have been able to even go into that detail maybe back then, or if they had tried, it might have been a little too clunky. But like this, it was like really amazing, like just opening with that, going underground, going into his like big, you know, mold device or whatever. Speaking of which, my daughter, as soon as like he shows up, leans over to me and goes, "Daddy, Mole Man." And I'm like, yeah. Like she called out the underminer as the Mole Man. And I'm like, yeah, nerd dad. All right. But
it also like, but not only that, but like the level of detail, even to the face, man.
Yes.
Like, I mean, like Mr. Incredible looked haggard.
Yeah.
Haggard in a way that he didn't look in the first movie when he was, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just their faces. Coloring,
yeah.
Like they were still the same characters, but they were so much more expressive.
Yeah. I mean, it was really interesting to me seeing them back to back because, the other thing, you know, when you talk about faces, Paul, like the big thing that I noticed, like with crowds, like all the sort of dimensions of the people in crowds or walking on the street, very oblong, very sort of like square or rectangular, sort of roundish like faces. But in this new movie, you look at the crowds and there's so many different types of faces. Like I was just like blown away at like how much of an added dimension the new movie adds, you know, just with like all these different kind of, you know, like just colors and, you know, different color eyes, different color, you know, because in The Incredibles 2, there's sort of like that thing of like the, what's the movie with Gregory Peck and the man with the, where he's at the office and I can't remember, but it's The Man in the Gray Flannel Suit or some, I think that's the name of the movie. And, but it's like very much like everyone sits at their desk and everyone shows up and wears a hat and everyone looks the same. And, you know, they're basically like almost like Joe versus the Volcano in the beginning where it's like everyone just goes to work, does, you know, and obviously the first Incredibles was also making a commentary on that as well. But in this one, it's like people are wearing different color sweaters, different hats, different, you know, skin tones, different shaped faces. And I was just like blown away. I was like, wow, the jump in technology is like amazing. And just even the colors of their costumes, like just like shone, like glowed like more red. It was incredibly impressive to see how far we've come, you know, just like in that, you know, I guess, well, 14 years isn't a short time. I mean, but it was really amazing to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, again, you say like that, you know, the opening fight, you know, you've got like just the camera moving in ways that, you know, you didn't have before. You've got the gravel like being thrown around and, you know, I love that it threw you right back into the world and right back into like the same problems that they still had 14 years ago. That was what was cool is that, you know, it just sort of like took them at that same point and continued to like push them from that, you know, from that rather than going in like a completely new direction.
Yeah. Just going the same interpersonal conflicts too, the same dynamic. Right. Like it was all played out really well. Like I didn't get the impression at all that these actors, even people playing these characters, had this whole gap. Like, it was nice to watch.
What's interesting about that too is like when they start, it's when they start from that point and they kind of like fight the underminer and then they sort of have to deal with the repercussions of that battle. you know, all over again, and the fact that they're still illegal. What's interesting is like, oh yeah, like you said, Paul, it's like, oh, the fight is over with Syndrome, but we still have the same problems. Like Bob doesn't have a job. You know, yeah. Our house has been destroyed. We have to go live in a hotel. And then they add that sort of like little extra of like the government guy being basically saying like, yeah, this is it. Like, you can't lean on us anymore. We're pulling the plug, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really cool to see. I like the. You know, and of course, you know, we spoil everything here, but, you know, thematically, the two movies match up really well with this time, you know, Helen taking Bob's role, Bob taking Helen's role.
Yeah.
And what's cool is that while 14 years didn't pass for them, it did for us.
Yeah.
So the issues that Helen's dealing with in her side of this story are just so different than the ones she would have faced 14 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. You're right.
You know, just that's what was really sort of striking is sort of how timely the movie, you know, hits in a lot of things that, you know.
Yeah, and how differently it might have been written if they had just jumped and did it to even a couple years later.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, but, you know, like the whole issue, you know, of her, you know, coming forth and, you know, taking her place, you know, as a hero of everyone else's equal, you know, I think it has like, it just has an extra resonance, you know, that would have been, you know, that I think we've had to sort of get to, you know, unfortunately as a society, this is the point that we're finally getting to that.
Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting because I like the way that you're sort of looking at it, because there's a couple of issues that I did have with the movie, which I loved, I'm not saying, but I wouldn't be me if I didn't like sort of nitpick. And it's interesting because I've had conversations with people at work and friends and stuff like that. Like, which one did you like better, the first one or the second one? You know, it's inevitable. You sort of are always. And I mean, I'm very much in sort of like, I did like the first one sort of better, because I feel like a critical review of this movie that I read, and I understood it like after, I didn't read the whole review, but I just came across like a paragraph or something, and was saying that like, it's interesting when you look at the Helen thing, yes, it's very much like perfect for our time. But when you look at the Bob thing, it's very much like, oh, this is like Mr. Mom. You know what I mean? Like, this has been done again and again and again. You know, like this sort of thing, but with the dad sort of like, so that sort of thing.
Here's the thing, though. I'll make your point, but like that, I think that speaks to it. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, and I'm just saying, like, that to me has sort of been very much done again and again, and so there's a little bit of a lack of freshness to that, but looking at it like you just said, to me, it's very much like, yeah, that makes sense, because discussing it with my daughter, and, you know, because she loved it, she likes the second one better, and she's like, she goes, Daddy, because girl power, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, talking to my wife and looking at it from the Helen angle, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it has come out sort of at the perfect time for what all the things that are happening in society.
Yeah. And I want to look at it from the Bob angle, too, because I think Bob's story is super important here. I mean, it has been done a lot, but particularly right now where, I mean, essentially Bob's a living weapon, you know, and you've got white males who are out of work, who are stressed out, who are weaponized, and he buckles down and still does the right thing, you know? And that's like an important message to send, you know? Like, you know, you just see him fighting the whole way through, you know? And that's what's awesome is that he sort of has to fight through like the bullshit he's been fed in order to get to do the right thing, you know?
That, and I think it was more about like his ego and less about Helen being a woman, right? Like, I never got the impression watching it that he was like, wah wah, oh, you're gonna take her, she can't do it. It was more of a equal partnership of like, oh, you're taking the sidekick, I want it to be me, man. Yeah, and so I felt they did a good job of portraying that. versus the other thing. But I get the Mr. Mom part, right, where he was at home, he's struggling, the kids can't think he, you know, can do as well, as good a job as mom. But yeah, you know, at the end of the day, he figures it out, you know, he kind of lets Helen do her thing and doesn't disrupt it, doesn't try to, you know, worry her by telling or that Jack-Jack has a bajillion. I love Jack-Jack, by the way.
Everybody loves Jack-Jack.
Jack-Jack, taking care of Jack-Jack, you know, and figuring it out and going to, what's her name? Edna? Is it Edna?
Yeah.
And, you know, having her make friends with Jack-Jack and all of that. So I get both sides of the.
No, I mean, that's a really great way of looking at it, too. And for me, though, like, I also feel like us talking about, like, let's say it had been made years and years ago, I feel there probably would have been more of that sort of like him trying to undermine her, for lack of a better term, undermine Helen, or just be like, oh, you want the woman or stuff like that. And there wasn't a lot of that in there. But I feel like the way that this one really... That part of the movie succeeded for me was when he finally just breaks down. And I mean, it got a tear out of me, especially being a dad, and where he's just like sitting with Violet on the couch and he says it out loud. He goes, I just want to be a good dad. And it's like any dad that's like wants to be involved with their kids, which, you know, we are sort of in a moment in time where there's a lot more of those out there, instead of like feeling like, oh, I have to go, you know, make the bacon, or, you know, whatever, bring home the bacon and make the bacon, bring home the bacon, and, you know, and stuff like that. Like, it just like that just for me was the moment where I was like, oh my God, you know, like you nailed it. Like it sort of embraced that struggle. It's a very great observation on your part, Paul, of like, where is my importance in this, you know, which is a sort of thing that I have had, you know, having two women in the house, where I'll be honest, there's definitely times where I'm just like, where do I fit in this? You know what I mean? But what value am I offering? And it was just like a really great struggle that they vocalized in that movie. And I just really identified with that part of it. Like that moment where he's just sitting on the couch and his big old back is to her and she's looking up at him and he's just this mountain and he's sort of like at the end of his rope and he's just like, I just want to be a good dad. I mean, you could have just, my heart just melted. I was just like, oh my God, Pixar, you're doing it to me again. Like, you know, so.
Wait till you watch the intro card. What's it called again?
Bow.
Oh, yeah.
Is Bow like an up-like experience where you're just like weeping from the,
No. It was, it got me. Whatever.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, sort of like my other like little nitpick too was just that the sequence with it, I didn't realize it up until we came home and we were talking about the first movie a little bit, and I was like, oh yeah, you remember that short with the babysitter where they show what happened with the babysitter and Jack-Jack in the first movie on the DVD, and my wife and daughter were like, no, I don't remember that. I was like, oh yeah, they did a whole special short where, you know, Jack-Jack starts to develop his powers, and, you know, when they pick up the messages at the end of the first movie, and so we watched that, and I was like, oh wow, they just kind of redid this with Bob, but like took it to another level, like,
yeah,
you know, took it to like fighting the raccoon. That fighting the raccoon bit was amazing.
I'll be honest with you, I could watch a whole movie of Jack-Jack versus the raccoon. I mean,
I know,
it was like
a video game.
A video game, but it was also like Roadrunner versus Coyote, but like at a super awesome level, you know?
That was amazing. Yeah. I mean, and just to keep introducing all of his powers through the raccoon fight was a great way to do it.
Yeah.
I love Jack-Jack. He was such the comedic just everything of that movie. And like, I was wondering, you know, how much influence did Jack-Jack have in the first film? And not really a whole lot, right? He's kind of just put off to the side, you know, until the end, like you just talked about. And so I'm really glad that they were able to use Jack-Jack for just so much comedy throughout the whole movie. I just found myself like losing it throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, and no, let's not, forego the raccoon face animation, because that raccoon, the way that they animated his face and everything, whenever he was like that bit where the raccoon gets stuck in the sort of backyard like lounge chair, and then all of a sudden you see like Jack light on fire. Like, I was just like, oh my god. And they play the like the loud, I forget if it was opera or classical music, and it's like, oh, genius.
Good time.
Well, and I love that the raccoon just kept coming back, right? Just when I thought, like, oh, the raccoon's done, he's freaked out. Nope, raccoon's coming back, right?
Yeah, exactly. The raccoon is not giving up at all, at all.
It's awesome. He's just a baby, and he's already got his arch nemesis.
Yeah, right. I know. It's so great. The, like, evil raccoon in the backyard. What did you guys think, and this is another issue I had, and I'm making it sound like I didn't like the movie, but I loved it, but I'm just sort of I've been breaking it down in my own head. Like, for me, the bit of them, like, just having come back from an adventure where they're against Syndrome, right? And Syndrome's whole thing was like, Bob is unemployed. Hey, come here. I've got a job for somebody with superpowers, and I will give you money. And then dun dun dun, turns out to be a supervillain plot. They sort of do the same exact thing in this movie.
Of course they do.
Why do you say of course they do?
Because
that's what superheroes do.
It's the system. I mean, look, they're a family. They've got to make a living, and that's the way the system works. The system works by sucking you in and promising you all these things, and then turning you around and screwing you. I mean, that's just, it doesn't matter. Helen learns the same lesson Bob does, that's what it is.
The American way.
That's really what it is that, like, at the end of the day, even though, like, they're heroes, you know, like, they can rely on each other and their friends, you know, but, like, the system just screws them every single time.
Cementing the lesson of trust no one.
You know, but, you know, I mean, it's what's cool in this movie, I thought, was that it opened it up with all of the other heroes.
Yeah.
And, like, the idea now that, like, that they can come forth and sort of be themselves, you know, to some degree. Like, you know, I feel like that opens up a lot, you know, because, I mean, that was the one thing I dug about the first movie, is, like, they invented all of those rad, like, sort of Silver Age heroes and then killed them off.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, with this movie, you actually get to, you know, not only see them, but, you know, get, like, a nice hero battle going on.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Your beef, Christian, then, is just that they use the same formula twice.
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, I mean, if you look at it from a straight up, like, superhero thing, I mean, and particularly Silver Age, I mean, they do sort of, like, rehash villain plots, like, all the time. So, I mean, for the time period that this thing is sort of set in, like, it does make sense. I mean, Paul's explanation makes sense too, but there was definitely a part of me that was watching this and got a sort of The Last Jedi, but The Force Returns sort of vibe, where I was like, a minute, I've kind of seen this before.
Yeah.
But the Screen Slayer stuff was so amazing to me that I was just, like, willing to be like, wow, you guys upped it up, you know, ratcheted it up a notch. And then not only that, but the villain had, like, an even better sort of, not even better, because I think Syndrome's is really sort of indicative of where, like, nerd culture was and where it's going, unfortunately, or where it went with the internet. But, like, Screenslaver just was, like, just a really great look at sort of, like, media and consumerism and stuff like that. Stuff never gets put into a Disney movie or a kids movie. You know what I'm saying?
It's great commentary for that, right? That we're all, right, slaves to our screens, looking at our phones all the time and computers and whatnot. You know, and that it makes you a different person, perhaps, or it makes you not yourself. that was all great, and I think a really good message. The creepy voice going through, right? You're just living your life through other people. You're just watching other people play games.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really good, creepily delivered, but really good message going through the film to beat. Although what I was going to ask you was, at what point did you see the twist, or did you know?
Oh, I knew as soon as they were introduced. I'm like, yeah. Oh, these are the bad guys. Like, I mean, it was just so predictable. That was the other thing. I'm like, oh yeah.
Like, literally, the only thing that surprised me was that the brother and sister weren't working together.
Yeah, exactly.
The alternative that I saw was either if the brother was into it, which I didn't think he was. If he was, it was like to set her up to just win. Like, no, we created this bad guy just so that you can win, you know? So you
I thought like that was coming too. And that to me would have, again, undermined Helen in such a horrible way. You know what I mean? I'm glad that they didn't pull that off because that whole sort of like, what is it, Rocky III, where it's like up until he meets Clubber Lang, he's like, we set you up with the best, with the worst fighters, Rock. You don't have it anymore. You know, that sort of thing. Like, I was really hoping that they
developed a solid Burgess Meredith impression.
No, I'm just saying, like, if they had gone that direction, I would have been really upset because I have to say that in this movie, I mean, I loved Elastigirl in the first one, but this one, the whole motorcycle thing, I was like, oh my God, this is so awesome. Like the front and the back of the motorcycle and just her figuring everything out. It was just great to see her and Holly Hunter, you know, sort of working on her own, separate from everyone else. And just like if they had underplayed her intelligence or ability to figure stuff out, I would have been pretty upset. And I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah, and I'm glad she figured. Yeah, it was awesome to see her figure it all out. Of course, up until the point where they, got her. But she figured it out, at least.
Yeah. She's the one that solves the mystery.
Yeah, and Catherine as the Evelyn was great. I loved her voice Catherine character. Her being able to kind of play
the buddy. And great character design, too. I mean, her hair and the face and the eyes, the way that she emoted and stuff or seemed like very laid back. It was really interesting to me, the way that they animated her.
Yep.
I thought that was, like, beautiful stuff. I mean, what about the sort of like final screenslaver fight with this sort of strobe effect?
That was my favorite. Yeah, it was amazing. I loved watching it, and I loved and so that was the first fight, right? I was gonna say it was really cool to watch the Elastigirl and Evelyn fight, but even before that, that was amazing. I really loved how they pulled it off, just the way the lights looked. Yeah, it was really cool.
The visuals of it, I couldn't figure out exactly what they were doing. Were they going to like 2D animation, like in between? Like, that's the sort of thing that, like, if I had been in the theater and had a remote, I'd be like, wait, everybody, we're going to rewind that right now. We're going to watch it again like five times. You know what I mean?
Essentially, and that's, it's what you're seeing there is computer controlled lighting where you're able to, like, just do amazing things with the contrasts and the textures in ways that, just we haven't been able to manipulate light and camera before. That was exciting. It was over so quick too.
Yeah.
I was sitting there in my seat and I felt like I'd been punched. I was like, what just happened to me? And like, I can't think of the last time I saw that in a movie,
Where you felt like you were sort of like exhausted after it.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, because you had to actively watch that, right? Because you had to figure out what was going on between the flashes. Did she get hit? Did she, what is he hitting? Did she hit him? Right?
It was plus, so you're much tripping detail out on the visuals of seeing it, and you're just like, oh my God, this is amazing. It played with time in a way that I haven't seen a mainstream movie play with time before.
Yeah, that's one of the good examples of the movie that makes you want to go back and watch it again.
I really pity anybody who goes into this movie on hallucinogens, because that sequence alone will probably send you to the loony bin. Like,
not a movie for shrooms, man.
Yeah, definitely
or,
not.
Or if it makes you a better person, please do it.
Say, or maybe even if you're epileptic, right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
That was a little.
Had you heard about that? That there was a little bit of a controversy that people were thinking that sequence might trigger seizures.
Yeah.
Although I've not heard any reports of it happening.
I haven't either, but I've also heard of, I think there's a Facebook page called Nerds with Vaginas, and they put up a warning on their page. Like, this might affect you if you are, like, photosensitive, like if you have epilepsy that's set off by, like, or have seizures and stuff like that. So I think maybe warnings might have been going around before people went to see the movie. But I also think that Pixar is smart enough to run that sequence and know, maybe have done the research to be like, what would set something like that off? What can we avoid? Because while it was a strobe, there was something definitely different about it in the way that the lights were going off that I didn't feel was like basically like a regular sort of mirror ball.
It wasn't like a flicker strobe because it was, you know, again, with like the degree that they were able to control the lights in that scene, you know, like that was really marvelous. Particularly, and I know you didn't see Solo, but I did see Solo and I liked it a lot, but it suffered from a very flat image.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't a lot of fill lighting in it, and I just wanted to see like more depth in the image, and it's amazing to see something like this, which is computer generated, and hold it up to something like Solo, which is, you know, shot on location and things like that, and to see that this one has like more depth and contrast and like feels more real than something that, you know, should feel more real. You know what I mean?
My God, this movie was just beautiful from beginning to end. I mean, the sequence in the helicopters when Elastigirl's being sort of like flung around and you see the city beneath you, I was just like, whoa. I just wanted to stare at that city for like ever. It was gorgeous, you know? Like, there were so many things, like the subway train sequence where she's, you know, riding on top of the subway and then you see like the background sky sort of like setting into dusk or whatever, and it's just like, they were just like this. This one visually, I mean, Coco kind of set like a new bar as far as I was concerned. Like, when I saw it, I was like, wow, we have come a long way, baby. Like, with all these, like with these computer generated movies. But this one too, where there were so many sequences where I just kept looking at it and the way the colors popped and everything, it was just like astounding to me, like really astounding. And the other thing I wanted to mention too was just, it's amazing to me how they made a stretchy superhero so incredibly cool and interesting, because usually the person in the powers that you did not want to have in comics, you know, when you were reading comics as a kid, the things that were kind of boring were the stretchy powers. Like, you know.
Well, yeah. Who are you going to be? Ralph Dibny, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But Elastigirl, she can have the front and the back end of her motorcycle flinging around, and she can sneak around and jump and, you know, whatever. And it just makes it so much more, they made her so much more interesting than any other sort of, they just put an imagination into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, what was cool is like, she has like sort of the inventiveness of Plastic Man.
Yeah.
But with like, you know, a real, without like just the wacky cartooniness, you know, she's like a real person and grounded.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We haven't even talked about the Violet sort of subplot, which was hysterical.
Oh,
I felt bad for Violet.
This is really good sort of like filling in the teenage girl, storyline where I believe the boy's name is Tony Reidinger, where he basically, the boy that she's supposed to go out on a date with, ends up getting his mind wiped by the government, perhaps a little too much, and does not remember her at all.
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny because it's like over the course of these two movies, she just has to keep reintroducing herself to him like so many times.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the sequence when they go out to eat in the diner and yes. he surprises her with, you know, visiting Tony's place of work. Oh, my God. We people were rolling in the aisle when the like the liquid comes out of her nose, like she, yeah. which she sees like who is waiting on them and just like almost loses her shit. She's just it, just like fantastic stuff.
Yeah. And like that gag like was so well played because like even like in the shots where like after that, she's off to the side and she's kind of out of focus, but you can still see she's got stuff running out of her nose.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just trying to cover it up. I was just like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. And the dad in like true dad fashion, completely oblivious, just like really carrying on like nothing just happened.
And just trying so hard to be a good dad. Yeah, so, yeah. Right? Like, come on, I took you here. He's a nice boy. Talk to him. Yeah. She's like, you don't understand what you've done.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Dash just embraces, like, okay, I'm just going to be the bratty little brother this trip, you know? Like, yeah. like you know, he's just, like, it's really funny to see him, like, just, you know, needle her and, you know, do that brother-sister thing that, you know, yeah, certainly my brother and I always did to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Since you watched the first one right before the second, did you notice much different between Dash's voices?
No, I actually didn't. And I haven't even checked to see if it must be a different actor.
Is
it really?
Yeah.
Wow, well, they nailed it because I didn't really notice. Cool. I mean, that was another thing I was sort of like looking for while I was watching it, was like trying to catch the differences. And I mean, I know Sarah Vowell was the voice for Violet and she stayed and pretty much everyone else did. But I didn't realize that Dash was a different voice.
Yeah, it looks like Huck Milner did the voice on the second one. And on the first one, where'd it go? I just set it up. Oh, as Spencer Fox.
Oh, wow. So they actually used a kid for those voices.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah,
that makes sense too. That the woman could play still a little kid. Yeah.
Yeah. Versus, well, Sarah Vowell's voice is very unique.
Oh, got it.
Yeah.
The woman who plays Tommy Pickles, right? You know, or she plays a lot of, you know, I forget her name.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Dash that was great in this movie. What was very much like what Paul said, sort of embracing the like needly little brother who just keeps making things worse. But the sequence that we loved, or that I loved, and we still walk around the house saying it, is like when he discovers the Incredicard. I mean, the Incredibeal.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think Incredicar sounds so much better, but it's the Incredibeal. And I used to think it was called the Incredicar, but the Incredibeal. And there he finds out that it has rockets, and he's like, shoot the rockets, shoot the rockets, shoot the rockets. Like, we walk around the house saying that, like, for the past week, we've been like, shoot the rockets, shoot the rockets, just like out of nowhere, because it's just such a great moment in the film where he just wants to see, like, you've got to shoot the rockets, you know. It's just brilliant the way he's like standing in front of the TV like little boys do when they get like excited, and like sticking his hands up in the air and just like, this is great. And then but the other moment that I love too was on the boat when Violet gives Jack-Jack to him, and she's like, no, you stay here, you're going to take care of him. And it's very much sort of and he's like, wait a minute, what? I don't do that sort of thing. And yeah. Again, it was sort of flashing on the whole subplot with Bob, Mr. Incredible, where she's like, no, you have to be responsible for your little brother. Yeah. And he kind of realizes like, oh yeah, I do. I do have to take care of my little brother, you know?
Yeah. And too, yeah, she gets that, Violet gets that moment too at the end, toward the end too, where she's like, well, if things go bad, you know, I've got Jack-Jack.
Yeah. Yeah, where she kind of comes into her own finally as like a little young adult, you know, that has her shit put together. So interesting thought that I had about Dash was, because he's so quick to just want to destroy everything, and I know it's mostly because he's just, you know, he's portraying the like hyper little kid. But I almost feel like if they did a 3, like they could set it up where he might be going towards the dark side, right? Because he wants to shoot up and bang bang everything. I could see it going that way. I could see Dash going dark.
Yeah.
Dark Dash.
Well, I could see that. Well, we kept thinking that Incredibles 3, that they get a dog They need to get a dog because they mean, or a pet of some kind, because you got to introduce the super pet.
I think they need a pet raccoon.
Yeah, the pet raccoon, right?
Train the raccoon.
Train the raccoon.
Rocket on him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we were thinking like, oh, a dog. A dog would be great and stuff like that. So, but what did you guys think of the new superheroes? Because, like, I mean, we touched on it a little bit, but those designs were, like, fantastic. I mean, it's funny how much the color schemes and some of the designs sort of went from like the 80s to sort of like the 90s to the 50s and stuff like that. Like, I particularly love that character. I loved Void. I liked her a lot.
Her hair was amazing.
Yeah. And I loved Screech, the sort of Birdman.
Oh,
and
man, then, when they twisted his head.
And his head, like, twisting her head around it. That, oh, my God.
Entering the fight sequence. Yeah, that was really funny.
Yeah. And then. Oh, who was the other guy? The Reflux guy. That was hysterical.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, and dude, what a gross, creepy, great effect too.
Yeah.
They let go. You're just like, oh yeah.
Exactly. At first, I thought, oh, what a silly superpower to have. And then when he did it, you're like, oh Jesus, that's like that's a serious superpower.
Yeah. How does anybody take that guy serious? Oh my God.
Right.
Holy cow. Yeah. It's just great how this new one really introduced new elements to everything, but touched on a lot of familiar stuff. The Edna Mode stuff was just, you know, oh, fantastic as always. You know, her sort of like coaching Bob on how to take care of their son, and, you know, and
I
or
love
like
she felt for Jack. I love their relationship so much.
Yeah. Where she sort of like becomes the sitter and she's like, bring him by anytime. You know what I mean?
Auntie Edna.
Auntie Edna. Like, she just falls in love with him as soon as she realizes he has powers. Like, that's just great. And that she can experiment on him.
Right.
Yeah.
And I love, you know, just the concept of Jack, honestly, you know, the idea that, like, he's just, because he has all of this potential, he has all of these powers, you know, he hasn't differentiated himself, you know, to the point where he's, you know, where he's one thing, you know, and that's sort of like the one of the coolest things about Pixar is that, like, Jack is such a perfect baby, you know, like that's what he acts like a baby, you know, like, mm-hmm. And he's, because sometimes they're little demons and sometimes they're, you know, like there's a million of them. And sometimes, you know, like everything that he does is just like a different aspect about
somehow
being
they
a
walk
baby.
Through walls and you don't know how they got there.
But it's taken to like, you know, the ultimate level,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah, I kind of said that before, but you kind of explained it. Yeah, it's just like the exemplification of a baby. You know, and like that's what made it all funny, right? Like I don't know if you saw it in the theater with a bunch of families. I literally sat next to a dad with an infant on his lap. And the infant was very good, I will say, and the parents took him out, so I'm not going to hate on them. But you could feel, you know, all the families kind of laughing along with all the jokes, and some of the laughter you could hear that's like, ha, 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 ha.
Like, yeah, right? Oh, well, I mean, the scene that where we just, like, as a family, we're just, like, laughing hysterically was when Bob finally loses it, and he's like, I crap lightning and I eat thunder and I crap lightning, and he's just like losing it in front of his kids. And I was talking with somebody about that at work, and I was like, yep, every parent has gotten to that moment where it's just like, I can't take it anymore. Like, I'm just gonna lose my, and you know, and you just, you know, what is the saying, time plus tragedy equals comedy or whatever,
right.
You know, it is very much that sort of bit where it's just like you're just so overwhelmed by everything, and it doesn't even have to be like what your kid is doing or has done, but you're just reached the boiling point. And to me, that, like, there were so many great moments with Bob to me as a dad where I was just like, oh my God, you guys nailed it. Like, holy cow. Like, not just sad stuff, but also triumphant stuff. Like the bit where he wakes up in the middle of the night, or he can't go to sleep, and he's going to try and look at the math book and stuff like that and try and figure out how it works. Like, that was just great. You know what I mean? Because Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, there can be in this sort of modern world where like modern dads kind of feel like, where do I fit in, you know? And it was just great to sort of see that, like an acknowledgement of that sort of thing. Very much like an acknowledgement of the mother, where it's like, yeah, she can go out and, you know, earn the money for the family and, you know, and do the quote unquote important stuff, or what society sees as the important stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I don't know. I think we can safely say that we all loved The Incredibles, right?
Yeah, I definitely
did. Yes, definitely liked it. I would watch it again for sure.
Highly recommend.
Because there's so many reasons to keep watching it, right? Just that visual fight scene alone, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be, when that Blu-ray comes out, I think I'm going to rewind that like 15 times. I mean, I'm dying to see this in the theater again. Like, I cannot wait to go see it again. I don't know when I'm going to be able to, but I'm just really glad that, I mean, apparently it just like raked in the cash over the weekend, which to me makes me really happy, because I know for a fact that there's a lot of people out there that were wondering if like people would even remember The Incredibles, or even, you know, whether they were still sort of like a valid property. It had been so long, but I have to say, please do not wait 15, 14 years for another sequel. Like, I mean, in a way it kind of makes it super special. Like, it's kind of the opposite of what's been happening sort of like with the Star Wars movies, where it's like one is coming out every 6 months and the uniqueness of it is kind of gone. But 15 years, maybe a bit much. Maybe wait like 4 or 5 and I'll see Incredibles 3. You know what I mean?
I could get behind that.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, awesome. So this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. We have been discussing The Incredibles 2. I almost said Incredibles 3. Incredibles 2, don't jump ahead in time. And I don't think I even announced you guys at the beginning of the podcast. I really apologize for that. Line.
Your message was much more important than introducing us.
Agreed.
Hands down.
Agreed.
Well, it's just so everyone knows, on the line I have had Reina Velarde and my good friend Paul Edwards, and my name is Christian Horn, and this has been Part-Time Fanboy. Thank you for listening. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Email us at ptf@parttimefanboy.com, and we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
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 Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
I'm doing part-time.
Part-time fanboy.com.